I went on into the airport, the monitors displaying flight times flickering to fuzz as I walked by. I went to one of the cafes inside, sat down, and ordered myself a cup of coffee. I had to pay for it with change. Most of my money had gone into paying off last month's rent and into the love potion I'd let Bob talk me into making. Money. I needed to get to work on Monica Sells' case, finding her husband. I didn't want to get out of hot water with the White Council, only to lose my office and apartment because I couldn't pay the bills. I sipped my coffee and tried to organize my thoughts. I had two areas of concern. The most important was finding out who had killed Tommy Tom and Jennifer Stanton. Not only to catch the killer before any more corpses turned up, but because if I didn't, the White Council would probably use the opportunity to have me put to death. And, while tracking down killers and avoiding execution squads, I had to do some work for someone who would pay me. Tonight's excursion wasn't something I could charge Murphy for. She'd have my ass in a sling if she knew I was running around asking questions, poking my nose in where it shouldn't be. So, if I wanted money from Chicago PD, I would have to spend time doing the research Murphy wanted. Black magic research that could get me killed all by itself. Or I could work on Monica Sells' missing husband case. I thought I had that one pretty well pegged down, but it wouldn't hurt to get it fleshed out fully. I could spend time working on it, filling out the hours on the retainer, maybe even getting a few more added on. That appealed to me a lot more than trying to work out some black magic. So I could follow up on the lead Toot Toot had given me. There'd been pizza delivered out to the Lake Providence home that night. Time to talk to the delivery man, if possible. I left the cafe, went out to the payphones, and dialed directory assistance. There was only one place near to the Lake Providence address that delivered pizza. I got the number and dialed through.
Pizza Express,
someone with a mouthful said.
What'll it be tonight?
Hey there, I said. I wonder if you can help me out. I'm looking for the driver who took an order out to an address on Wednesday night. I told him the address and asked if he could help me speak to the driver.
Another one, he snorted. Sure, hang on. Jack's just got in from a run.
The voice on the other end of the line called out to someone, and a minute later, the high baritone of a young man spoke tentatively into my ear.
Hello?
Hello, I answered. Are you the driver who took the pizza to...
Look, he said, his voice exasperated and nervous. I said I was sorry already. It won't happen again.
I blinked for a minute, off balance.
Sorry for what? Jesus, he said.
I heard him move across the room with a lot of music and loud talk in the background, and in the background noise cut off as though he'd stepped into another room and shut the door behind him.
Look, he said in a half whine, I told you I'm not going to say anything to anyone. I was only looking. You can't blame me, right? No one answered the door, so what was I supposed to do?
His voice cracked in the middle of the sentences.
It's hell of a party, but hey, that's your business, right?
I struggled to keep up with the kid. What exactly did you see, Jack? I asked him.
No one's face,
he assured me, his voice growing more nervous. He gave a jittery little laugh and tried to joke.
Better things to look at than faces, right? I mean, I don't give a damn what you do in your own house, or your friends, or whatever. Don't worry about me. Never gonna say a thing. Next time, I'll just leave the pizza and run a tab, right?
Friends. Plural. Interesting. The kid was awfully nervous. He must have gotten an eyeful. But I had a gut instinct that he was hiding something else, keeping it back.
What else?
I asked him. I kept my voice calm and neutral. You saw something else. What was it?
None of my business, he said instantly. None of my business. Look, I gotta get off this line. We have to keep it open for orders. It's Friday night. We're busy as hell.
What? I said, separating my words and keeping them clipped. Else.
Oh, shit.
He breathed, his voice shaking.
Look, I wasn't with that guy. Don't know anything about him. I didn't tell him you were having an orgy out there, honest. Jesus, mister, I don't want any trouble.
Victor Sells seemed to have a real good idea of how to party and of how to frighten teenagers. One more question, I'll let this go, I told him. Who was it you saw? Tell me about him.
I don't know him. I didn't recognize him. Some guy with a camera, that's all. I went around to the back of the house to try the back door, got up on your deck, and just saw inside. I didn't keep on looking, but there he was up there, all in black, with his camera taking pictures. He paused as someone pounded on the door he had earlier closed. Oh, God. I have to go, mister. I don't know you. I don't know nothing. And then there was a scrambling of feet as he hung up the phone. I hung up the phone myself and ambled back to George's loner. I worked out details I had just learned on the way back to my apartment. Someone else had called Pizza Express, apparently just before I had. Someone else had gone asking after the pizza boy. Who? Why, Victor Sells, of course. Tracing down people who might have information about him. His possible presence in the lake house. Victor Sells, who had been having some sort of get-together out there that night. Maybe he'd been drunk, or one of his guests had, and ordered a pizza. And now Victor was trying to cover his tracks. Which implied that Victor knew someone was looking for him. Hell, as far as I knew, he'd been in the house when I'd gone out there last night. This made things a lot more interesting. A missing man who doesn't want to be found could get dangerous if someone came snooping after him. And a photographer. Someone lurking around outside of the windows and taking pictures. I rummaged in my duster's pocket and found the round plastic film canister. That explained where that had come from, at any rate. But why would someone be out there in the house taking pictures of Victor and his friends? Maybe because Monica had hired someone else, a PI, without telling me. Maybe just a neighbor with a hots for taking dirty pictures. No way to tell, really. More mysteries. I pulled the Studebaker into my drive and killed the engine. I tallied the score for the evening. Enigmas lots, Harry, zero. My investigation for Monica Sells had netted me one husband throwing wild parties in his beach house after losing his job and working hard not to be found. Probably an advanced case of male menopause. Monica didn't seem to be the kind of woman who would take such a thing with good grace, more like the kind who would close her eyes and call me a liar if I told her the truth. But at least it merited a little more looking into. I could log a few more hours in on the case, maybe earn a little more money out of it before I gave her the bill. But I still didn't really know anything. The angle with Bianca had come to a dead end at Linda Randall. All I had were more questions for Miss Randall, and she was as closed as a bank on Sunday. I didn't have anything solid enough to hand to Murphy to let her pursue the matter. Damn it. I was going to have to do that research after all. Maybe it would turn up something helpful, some kind of clue to help me and the police find the murderer. And maybe dragons would fly out of my butt. But I had to try. So I got out of the car to go inside and get to work. He was waiting for me behind the trash cans that stood next to the stairs leading down to my front door. The baseball bat he swung at me took me behind the ear and pitched me to the bottom of the stairs in a near senseless heap. I could hear his footsteps but couldn't quite move as he came down the stairs toward me. It figured it was just the kind of day I was having. I felt his foot on the back of my neck, felt him lift the baseball bat, and then it came whistling down towards my skull with a mighty crack of impact. Except that it missed my motionless head and whacked into the concrete next to my face, right by my eyes instead. "Listen up, Dresden," my attacker said. His voice was rough, low, purposefully hoarse. "You got a big nose. Stop sticking it where it doesn't belong. You got a big mouth. Stop talking to people you don't need to talk to. Or maybe we're going to shut that mouth of yours." He waited a melodramatically appropriate moment and then added, "Permanently." His footsteps retreated up the stairs and vanished. I just lay there, watching the stars in front of my eyes for a while. Mister appeared from somewhere, probably drawn by the groaning noises, and started licking at my nose. I eventually regained my mobility and sat up. My head was spinning, and I felt sick to my stomach. Mister rubbed up against me, as though he sensed something was wrong, purring in a low rumble. I managed to stand up enough to unlock my apartment door, let Mister and myself in, and lock the door behind me. I staggered over to my easy chair in the darkness and sat down with a woof of expelled breath. I sat motionless until the spinning slowed down enough to allow me to open my eyes again, and until the pounding of my head slowed down. Pounding head. Someone could have been pounding on my head with a baseball bat just then. Pounding my head into new and interesting shapes that were inconducive to carrying on business-like pursuits. Someone could have been pounding Harry Dresden right into the hereafter. I cut off that line of thought. "You are not some poor rabbit, Dresden," I reminded myself sternly.
you are a wizard of the old school, a spells linger of the highest caliber. You're not going to roll over for some schmuck with a baseball bat just because he tells you to. Galvanized by the sound of my own voice, or maybe only by the somewhat unsettling realization that I had begun talking to myself, I stood up and built a fire in the fireplace, then walked unsteadily back and forth in front of it, trying to think, to work out the details. Had this evening's visits triggered the warning? Who had reason to threaten me? What were they trying to keep me from finding? And most importantly, what was I going to do about it? Someone had seen me talking to Linda Randall, maybe. Or more likely, someone had seen me showing up at Bianca's place, asking questions. The Blue Beetle may not be glitzy, but it was sort of difficult to mistake for anyone else's car. Who would have reason to have me watched? Why? Had gentleman Johnny Marconi followed me so that he could have a word with me? So he could ask me to keep out of this business with Tommy Tom's murder? Yes, he had. Maybe this had been another reminder from the mod boss. It had that kind of mafioso feel to it. I staggered to my kitchenette and fixed myself a Tisson tea for the headache, then added in some aspirin. Herbal remedies are well and good, but I don't like to take chances. Working on that same principle, I got my Smith & Wesson 38 Chief Special out of its drawer, took the cloth covering off of it and made sure it was loaded. Then I stuck the revolver in my jacket pocket. Wizardry aside, it's tough to beat a gun for discouraging men with baseball bats. And I sure as hell wasn't going to roll over for the tiger-souled Johnny Marconi. Let him push me around. Let him know it was all right to walk all over me whenever he felt like it. No way in hell. Or on Earth, either. My head was throbbing and my hands were shaking. But I went down the ladder to my workroom and started figuring out how to rip someone's heart out of his chest from 50 miles away. Who says I never do anything fun on Friday night?